Good morning. Can't tell you what a joy and honor it is to be here with you all, speaking in front of you. I came across this church kind of by accident. I was working at a summer camp, and this group of kids came with Joy, and she found out that I was going to be in Atlanta, and she invited me to come here. And I just showed up one Sunday, and I've had the privilege of leading worship and engaging in conversations with the wonderful youth here, and now I'm really excited and honored to be speaking with you all. So, continuing on our series about Jesus' journey to Jerusalem, we are going to be talking about Jesus and Zacchaeus. So, you might have noticed that the text that we read was a little bit wooden, kind of awkward, and that's because it is a direct translation from the Greek that I did with the help of my Greek professor at Mercer School of Theology, Dr. Angela Parker. And the reason I translated it directly from the Greek was because there are a few things that are missing in our translations, even the ones that are more accurate. And one of those you might have noticed is that Zacchaeus is referred to as being little in maturity, not just in height. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. But before that, I want to talk about the context of what was going on around this time in relation with Rome, who's in charge here, and the Jewish people, which Zacchaeus, Jesus, and all the disciples and everybody else are a part of. So at this time, Rome is the central authority and has economic, social, and political power. The Jewish people had a unique status within the Roman Empire that made them ethnically distinct. So they were their own group of people, but they were still subjugated to the laws and the regulations that Rome had. And there were instances, as we talked about a few weeks ago, of the Jewish people rising up and rebelling and claiming their own autonomy, and then Rome coming back in and shutting things down once again. So this has happened over and over again, and there's a sentiment with the Jewish people at this time that Rome is in charge, and they're essentially the big bad, and anybody who works with Rome is someone that is supporting their colonialism and their kind of the iron fist that they're ruling these people with. So that leads us to Zacchaeus, who is one of these people that is working with Rome. So Zacchaeus' name actually means purity, which contrasts with the view of what his profession was at the time. So a tax collector is exactly what it sounds like. It's someone that collects tax on behalf of Rome. So the Jewish people would not have been in favor of what Zacchaeus was doing, and likely the Roman authorities would not have liked Zacchaeus that much either. So he's kind of stuck in this middle place of he's collecting tax, and the text implies that he's stealing from them as well, and he's handing it over to Rome. So they don't like him. We're not sure if he likes them or what he feels, but I imagine that Zacchaeus was a very anxious person, wondering about how others perceived him because of his occupation. So before we get into the text specifically, I want to talk about the author of this text, which is attributed to Luke, who also wrote Acts, which is sometimes called Luke Acts. So he uses this technique called physiognomy, and this is a fancy word of saying you look at somebody, and based on what they look like, they have characteristics. We try not to do that today, but at this time, this was a common practice. So there's examples of this in the text, like when Jesus refers to Herod as a fox, or to the crowd who is fleeing as a brood of wicked vipers. So what the actions that they're taking, to kind of refortify it, they use something in the text. So the word that is used to describe Zacchaeus' appearance in Greek is elikia, which means short in stature, which is where we get the translation of short, but also in maturity. So it doesn't directly translate in English, but if you look at it as the way that somebody's built up, both physically and mentally, so Zacchaeus is lacking in that characteristic. So the use of this word could be a double meaning, implying that he is like a child, being small and therefore lacking in maturity. And in comparison with the crowd, he can't see over them. So this could be literally, he can't see over them, but also they are mature enough, the crowd that is at this point following Jesus on his way up to Jerusalem. So they are seeing Jesus, and they're part of this movement. Zacchaeus is not. He's literally and figuratively unable to see kind of where they are at. But Zacchaeus recognizes this, and people don't give Zacchaeus enough credit. Because he decides himself that he's going to run up ahead of the crowd. He's going to climb up in the sycamore tree to behold Jesus. The word that's used for seeing is, the Greek word is idu, which is not just seeing, but behold. It's very grand. So Zacchaeus is not just trying to physically see Jesus, but kind of see what he's all about. So it's also important to note that Zacchaeus goes up a tree. And to get to Jerusalem, Jesus physically and literally has to go up. So they're kind of mirroring each other in this situation. But at this point, Luke flips the position in a very unusual way. Zacchaeus and Jesus are, when they make eye contact and establish connection with each other, Zacchaeus is above Jesus. So now Jesus has to look up towards Zacchaeus. So the person who has been throughout this whole text, we're in chapter 19, this whole the whole book of Luke has been considered as the realized one, the one who is enlightened to kind of the way that things have to be and is on this grand mission. Now suddenly he is looking up at Zacchaeus. And at this, up until this point, Zacchaeus has been looked down both physically and for his occupation. But suddenly Jesus is looking up at him. And I think that this is Zacchaeus's aha moment. It's a moment of awakening. Jesus is, Zacchaeus's plan was to behold Jesus and see what he was about. But Jesus kind of flips it, and now he's seeing what Zacchaeus is all about. And what he's seeing is his recognition, or his effort to grow. But this moment would not exist had Zacchaeus not decided to climb up the tree. So immediately when contact is established between the two, Jesus states that he must remain in the house of Zacchaeus that night. And throughout this text, they use the word today a few times, which is kind of implies a sense of urgency that Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. But in the midst of that, he has to stay with Zacchaeus tonight. And he's saying this in front of all the people that Zacchaeus has repeatedly stolen from. So naturally, they're going to be upset about that. After he says this to Zacchaeus, Zacchaeus comes down the tree, and I would imagine that Zacchaeus is feeling validated and affirmed in his effort to climb the tree and to see Jesus. And the result of Jesus acknowledging this is immediate. He renounces half of what he has, and he says that he's going to pay back fourfold what he has stolen. He has recognized the ways that he was profiting off of the people that were part of his community and working for a system that did not care about them. And something that really struck me in this text is Jesus says that he has to remain with Zacchaeus and that he's going to spend time with him before Zacchaeus has a chance to say that he's going to do any of these things. So Jesus's statement, and it's not an invitation, it's not, hey, can I come over? We know that Jesus is not a good house guest. He shows up and often moves the order of where people are sitting and does all sorts of things that could cause a lot of anxiety to whoever's hosting. So it's not surprising that he directly says to Zacchaeus, by the way, I'm coming over. But it's not contingent on anything that Zacchaeus has done. Because up until this point, all that we know about Zacchaeus is that he has stolen from people, the people don't like him, he's working with the oppressor. And for a lot of these people, they would not be seeing the kind of the higher ups in Roman society. So when they see Zacchaeus, he becomes a symbol of that oppression. He's a symbol of the hundreds of years that they've been oppressed and subjugated and stolen from. And taxes have been collected from them in an unfair way. He is the symbolic representation of oppression. But Jesus says, I'm coming to your house today. So the result of Jesus giving this invitation, and I'll just say a declaration of what he's going to do, whether Zacchaeus likes it or not, it's immediate. And it's also kind of extreme. It's half of what Zacchaeus has. And he's paying back fourfold what he has stolen. But it's not because that Zacchaeus has done this that Jesus has said, okay, now I'm coming over. It's before any of that. What Zacchaeus said did not, it's not contingent, it's, what Jesus did is not contingent on what Zacchaeus has said. So he also, I love that this conversation is happening in the midst of everybody that he's stolen from. And they're just watching and obviously they don't like it. And they say that, you know, they're grumbling about it, like, why is Jesus doing this? And that might be a little bit familiar to us. when we see good things happening to people that we don't expect them to happen to. And sometimes when we see the efforts made by people that have hurt us to get better, and sometimes we don't like that. So Zacchaeus recognizes that Jesus is accepting him. And after he says that he's going to give away his possessions and pay everyone back, Jesus says that he too is a son of Abraham, meaning that he's part of this flock, he's part of this family. And he says, what has usually been translated is, Jesus says that he has come for the lost one. But this word, time for another Greek word, is apollolos, which translates to lost, ruined, or destroyed. Yeah. So sometimes that lost language, when we've heard it a lot, it sometimes loses its meaning. So I really like the word ruin, because Zacchaeus was not just lost in his path, but he was ruining himself. Yeah. Be it social ruin, financial ruin, psychological, spiritual, and he was ruining the lives of other people as well. And I think it's just so impactful that Jesus is coming for the ones that are stuck in these positions and stuck in these systems that are oppressing people. But again, none of this would have happened, Zacchaeus renouncing these things and Jesus beholding him, if Zacchaeus had not taken the effort to climb that tree. So I think Zacchaeus is a great model for us on growth and action. And there's a couple of steps here, starting with recognition, then going to effort, to an external acknowledgement, and then action, and then deliverance. And then it kind of repeats itself, which is really frustrating for us. But starting with recognition, so this can be acknowledging your own privilege and what systems you're participating in. And this is going to be kind of ambiguous, so please bear with me and be creative, because this can be individual or it can be systematic. And something that we're learning in the past couple of years is that a lot of evil that's happening in the world, and I'm specifically using the word evil, is systematic. It's not just bad people doing bad things, but it's a system that supports bad actions for personal gain and profit. So in Zacchaeus's case, this is acknowledging what his position is with Rome, and acknowledging that it's hurting people, it's ruining his life, and it's ruining the lives of other people. So the first step is accepting that we have ignored the implications of our actions. So then we move to effort, which is going up the sycamore tree. These are the steps we take to grow. The old system of doing things just does not cut it anymore. And our immaturity is just very obviously laid out to us. And this can be really embarrassing, when it's like, man, I've been doing that. And you think, oh gosh, no wonder that that person may not like me, or, you know, it's uncomfortable. And this whole process is uncomfortable and it's not fun, but it's important. Because instead of just sitting around and hoping for somebody to change the system, you take agency. And this might look like researching, educating, and asking questions to learn more about what actions you want to take and what systems you've already been a part of. So how is leading this kind of, for lack of a better term, lifestyle, or participating in this thing, how is this hurting other people? Why do we do this thing anyway? There's a theory that I really like in the world of social sciences called post-colonialism. And this is basically looking at how have certain colonial policies been put into place. Rather than what are they saying, it's more like how are they enforced. So getting to the nuts and bolts of these systems, like why does this system exist? How is this hurting people? So this is the effort part. This is education. And one thing I want to mention is it's not up to the people that we have hurt to tell us how we have hurt them. It's up to us to take the steps to educate ourselves. And sometimes the people that we have hurt don't want to be a part of our lives anymore. And that's uncomfortable and that's hard, but that's part of the process of growth. The next step is acknowledgement. So this is the moment that we realize that our effort to grow is recognized by something or someone that is beyond ourselves. And this is the moment that Jesus and Zacchaeus are looking at each other. So this shows us that sometimes we are putting in this effort and we're trying to educate ourselves, and things just kind of start to click. And it can look like a lot of different things. So I have some examples. For me personally, when I'm in this process of trying to grow, sometimes it's, well, a lot of times it's frustrating. But there's a moment where there's just kind of this intense clarity. And sometimes it comes in prayer or meditation or on a walk or just out of the blue. And it's that moment where you see for yourself, like, okay, I can do this. This is something that's possible, and I'm seeing the ways that I'm growing and the ways that I'm changing, and God is working through me. And this is possible, and it's, you know, it's hard, and we're not denying that it's hard, but there is gratitude that we have the opportunity and that God has given us the chance to grow and to change. Yeah, and it's an uplifting moment and a moment that gives us courage to keep pressing on. It can also look like, in those moments of stress, just this renewed sense of energy that is coming beyond yourself, but also somehow within yourself. And it's the presence of God within you, giving you that courage to keep fighting, to keep growing, to keep changing. It can also look like a moment where you suddenly see the humanity in somebody else, and you realize, I haven't been seeing you as a person. I've been seeing you for the label that's been put on you. So it's, a lot of times this is emotional and it's overwhelming, but I think it kind of gets to the heart of the matter that there is something very deep at work, and it's being acknowledged by something outside of just us. And finally, or not finally, the second one, or second to last, is action. So this is as a result of recognizing our immaturity and having that desire to grow and to change our perspective, a new way of living emerges. This action that you thought was just about you is suddenly about all of us. It's not just you and your relationship with this other person that you hurt, or you and the system you're a part of. It's suddenly something that involves everybody. And when you realize this, it's a holy moment. Because one thing I love about the South is that saying, y'all means all. You know, it's about every single one of us. And through our own process of trying to change and grow, it's a ripple effect. So in the ways that Zacchaeus was hurting people and robbing them, that violence doesn't end there. The people that have been hurt, that violence transfers onto the next person. And it's a ripple effect. But the same thing is true when we do something good. When we show kindness to somebody, that kindness just doesn't stay with them. It transfers, and it keeps going, and it's like a ripple effect. So the only way to change systems is to first change our own perspective. So this action might not be appreciated, valued, or recognized, but that is not the point. Even though, like I said, social recognition is really important and can give us the courage to keep persisting in this process of growth, the reason for growing must not depend on visibility. It's not about being seen, and a lot of times we get caught in this loop of performance. Yeah. That, hey, you remember when I was doing this thing? Check it out. Now I'm doing this thing, and it's so much better. It's like, hey, do you remember? Are you paying attention to what I'm saying? Look, I used to live like this. Now I'm living like this. Why isn't anybody noticing? And it is frustrating, and a lot of the times you don't realize that you're doing it. And a part of this whole process is that it's not one and done. You don't just do it once and then you're good. It's constantly self-critiquing and wondering, how can I be growing? How can I keep educating myself? How can I keep learning and trying to be better and improve? And so finally, as a result of these actions and the new lifestyle, we come to deliverance. Which is also salvation. The words are kind of interchanged there. So once the action plan has been made and we're committed to the process of growing, deliverance from our own ruin and the ruin of others starts to take place. It is a slow process, and many times it's one step forward and three steps back. We feel like we're right back to where we started. And this is, bear with me, this is something I've been thinking about for a few months. Sometimes it feels like we're in the rhythm of going in a circle, and you recognize something, you put in the effort to grow, you get that acknowledgement and support, and then you put it into action, and then you mess up, and you feel like you're right back to where you started. But I propose that it's not a circle, but it's a spiral. And each step that we're taking is a step up, and with each step, we're getting better, and we're learning, and we're growing. But the frustrating part is that it's slow. And our perspective is really limited because all we've ever experienced is our own perspective. And all we ever will experience is our own experiences. We can't see that concept of deep time, of growth over hundreds of years and systems that have changed. But all we can do is make that effort to take each step or each day one step at a time. And when you do fail, you've got all this other experience. You've been through the effort before. You've been through the growing process. You have more resources each time you come back to the start. And I don't know if there's a top to this spiral, but I don't think that's the point. I think that deliverance and salvation comes with the continued effort in each moment to say, am I going to choose life or am I going to choose death? Am I going to choose to help people or am I going to choose to serve myself? And sometimes you do a little bit of both at the same time. Sometimes it is about wanting to be seen, and sometimes it's about helping people. And let's not pretend that you only have one motive every time you do something, but it's through this continuous process of trying to educate and grow that we attain deliverance and salvation. And I want to note that these harmful systems that Zacchaeus was a part of and that we are a part of don't just hurt the people that are exploited by the systems, but they hurt us too. Amen. When we're a part of it, we're keeping ourselves imprisoned by this system of hurting people. We're telling ourselves that we have to do this. There's no other choice. And getting from the first step to the last step is going to take some time. Yes. It's not pretty. It's not accepted by a lot of people. And it makes people uncomfortable when they see that suddenly you're not participating in what you used to, especially if that thing you participated in was with a group of people. And suddenly you start hearing questions, kind of like the crowd grumbling in the story, and they ask, why can't you just be normal? Sure, that issue is important, but what can we even do about it? Yeah. And my all-time favorite one, why can't you see that's just the way it is? Yeah. That is not going to cut it. That's not real. Things are constantly in change, and nothing is going to last, but we have to take the steps each and every day to realize this salvation that's for all of us. And just because it's the way it is doesn't mean that's how it has to be. We can recognize our immaturity and make the effort to grow, connect with God, and in this process of growth, put this all into action and save our own communities and ourselves from ruin. Let's pray.